The saga of Hagar is found in Genesis 16 and 21. Her story takes place during the late Bronze Age, which was between 2000 and 1550 BC. The Bronze Age was the period in world history when metal began to be used for tools and weapons. Hagar came from a cultural background that was highly developed. She came from Egypt, and it was socially and politically advanced. It had elaborate cities, it had running water and plumbing. It had a complex economy. Now, by contrast, the living conditions of the Hebrews were primitive. Hagar's name means stranger, and she was a stranger in every sense of the word. Coming from Egypt, she was never accepted in Hebrew circles. Her mistress, Sarah, never used her name. Abraham never used her name. It was always my servant or your servant. Hey, guys, she actually had a name. Hagar was an Egyptian slave who belonged to Abraham's wife. I told you last week that she was part of the payoff by the Pharaoh to get Abraham and Sarah to leave their country. So Pharaoh sends Hagar off with a couple of Yehus who lived on the backside of the desert. It was a huge culture shock for Hagar. God had previously promised Sarah and Abraham a son, but Sarah got impatient because it was taking too long. So Sarah gave Hagar to Abraham to be a surrogate mother to bear them a son. This is the first recorded instance of sex trafficking. Irony of all ironies, Sarah also conceived and bore a son pretty soon after that. What became of this situation was an unholy competition between two mothers and their sons. The end of this little surrogacy project was the expulsion of Hagar and her son Ishmael to the desert to fend for themselves. Reading from Genesis 21, 8 through 10. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abram, laughing. So she said to Abraham, cast this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. How did Hagar come to be a slave in the first place? From the Stone Age to the Middle Ages, the color of your skin had very little to do with whether or not you were a slave. Unlike in the early days of America, if your skin was black, that meant you were probably a slave. But in the ancient world, people became slaves for many different reasons. Soldiers or their families who were captured in a war became slaves. People became slaves to get out of debt. If you owed somebody money and you couldn't pay it, that person could make you a slave, sell you, and get the money. Sometimes people sold their children into slavery to get money. If your mother was a slave, you were automatically a slave. Slavery was also used as a punishment for crime. Slavery was used, in some cases, to get a wife. Hagar was probably already a slave before she was given to Sarah. Jews and Muslims view Hagar very differently. Jews link Hagar with a succubus. Succubi are demons who take on female forms with the intention of seducing men. In Jewish thought, it's not Sarah's fault that this happened. It's not Abraham's fault this happened. The Jews say, this is all Hagar's fault because she was an evil succubus. They call her a demon. As you can see, Hagar has a negative reputation in Judaism. I would go so far as to say that Christians look down their noses on her too. We think of her as second class, which I don't think is fair. Muslims, on the other hand, hold Hagar in high esteem. It has been estimated that 1 out of 5 women in the world are Muslim. Each one of these women relates to Hagar on a personal level. From my perch, it's easy to see why. From my perspective, the Muslim religion hasn't been a boatload of laughs for women. Many, especially in the Middle East, know what it's like to be shunned, unaccepted, to be abused in every way. Many Muslim women today are faceless and nameless, just like Hagar was. According to the Quran, Hagar and her son Ishmael were the ancestors of the Arab nations. This is also supported by the Holy Bible. Furthermore, in Islam, Hagar is the maternal ancestor of Muhammad, which also sounds right biblically. The Quran teaches that the spot in which God saved Hagar and Ishmael from thirsting to death was this place called Mecca. I'm sure we've all heard of Mecca. Muslims have to go to Mecca every year. It's called the Hajj. So they have to retrace Hagar's steps. For 13 centuries, they have done this. The pilgrimage to Mecca needs to be made at least once in a lifetime for every Muslim adult, and this fulfills the fifth pillar of Islam. When we talk about how to understand Muslims, we need to start right here with Hagar. Islam's origins come from a troubled family. Islam was born out of an abusive relationship. It began from hatred and jealousy. This troubled relationship, which became a religion, continues in our time and will continue to the end of world history. And the two nations, which were represented by the two sons of Abraham, Ishmael and Isaac, they fought from the very beginning and they will fight till the end of time. When America got into the war with Iran, we got into the middle of a 4,000-year-old family feud, and we think we can bring an end to it. We can't. I'm sorry to tell you. Read the Bible, folks. It tells us we cannot solve this problem. The two mothers have a falling out. The legal wife, the one with all the power, kicks out the slave who has no power. There's nothing Hagar can do about it. So Hagar journeys south, trying to return to her homeland, Egypt. She followed the road to Shur, which was one of the trade routes passing through the Sinai Peninsula. Alone and unaided, it was virtually impossible for her to survive in the hot, open desert. In the desert, in dire straits, Hagar encounters the living God. Reading from Genesis 16, 7 through 13. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai," she replied. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will so increase your descendants that they too will be numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now with child and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees me." I believe the reason the angel of the Lord sent Hagar back to her abusive mistress was for safety. Hagar is young, she's far away from home, and she's pregnant. She's in the wilderness. She's surrounded by a lot of bad nations. Some of them were even the descendants of the Nephilim, including the Canaanites. We heard of them previously in Genesis 6. These are really dangerous people. She's vulnerable, and she's in danger, and so is her unborn baby. So out of love, God sends her back. Names in ancient biblical cultures were interesting things. People were given labels for names. When you open your pantry, how do you know which can is the can of beans? Because the can says beans. So people in the ancient world were named in similar fashion. People were named characteristics that defined them. Like when Esau was born, they named him Esau, which means hairy, H-A-I-R-Y, because he was born with red hair all over him. The prophet Hosea knows that the new baby his wife just gave birth to is another man's baby, so he names it Lo-Ammi, which is not a nice word meaning I'm not the kid's father. Today, people are not named like this. Thank heavens. Otherwise, we would have names like Big Nose or Not That Bright or This Is the Last One, I Swear. Names in the Old Testament are full of meaning and they're descriptive of the person. Following the practices of her culture, Hagar gives God a name that describes who God is for her at the moment she meets him. She calls him the God who sees me. To Hagar, this name, the God who sees me, is fraught with meaning. Here she is, the lowest man on the totem pole, the one who is forced to be a surrogate mother, the one who is abused by her mistress, while Abraham just looks the other way. She was the lowest of the low. But even worse than that, she was invisible. No one saw her as anything other than a slave. She was not seen as a human being. As I said, when Abraham and Sarah refer to her, she only refers to as that slave girl. They only refer to her as a servant. They don't give her a name. They don't give her dignity or respect, and they don't speak to her personally. But God does. It isn't until God finds her that she is called by her name. Yes, finally somebody sees her. God sees her. He is the God who sees. Hagar has recognized that there was someone who actually knows who she is. He was watching over her and her child. No doubt she was versed in some mystical Egyptian religions from her childhood. No doubt she worshipped many strange deities, but she still found the God of Abraham in a real experiential way. The God who sees didn't hold her religion against her. He didn't say, "Well, if I'm going to help you, you have to become a Christian first." We don't even know if she became a follower of God after her experience. I actually think it's unlikely. I say this because Ishmael did not worship the Lord. He was probably raised worshiping God along with his mother's assortment of Egyptian gods, because Islam is chock full of Egyptian religion. The idea that God is the one who sees me may have a negative connotation for people. The idea that God sees what we're doing is a little unsettling, especially if what we're doing is naughty. I don't know if you remember that creepy little Sunday school song, "Oh, be careful, little hands, what you do, for the Father up above is looking down in love, so be careful, little hands, what you do." I think that song is kind of scary. I didn't teach it to my kids because it's scary, and I think it gives God kind of a bad reputation. The song goes on to warn just about every body part from being bad. Be careful, little feet, where you go. Be careful, little mouth, what you say. Be careful, little ears, what you hear. God is watching. God sees you. Aha! A negative spying eye is not the meaning of Hagar's name for God. This slave girl, who was nameless, faceless, culturally valueless and unseen, through the intervention of God, becomes seen and valued. That's what we should think of when we know that God is watching us. He is watching us because we are seen, we are loved, and we are valued. And this is why Hagar chose the name, the God who sees me. Hagar does not know that God is the God of Abraham, but she only knows him as the God who sees me. Hagar introduces us to the God who cares for the oppressed and the abused. We know from Hagar's story, we are seen by a God who sees the overlooked. To me, it is a comfort that God sees us in our distress. When we find ourselves neglected or excluded or abused by others, we do not go unnoticed by the God who sees. As such, we need to be God's eyes in this world and see the nameless, unseen, and undervalued. We should be the people who see. The Gospels tell us when Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like a sheep without a shepherd. How often do we walk by the underdogs in our society and have zero compassion? We don't even give them a second glance. Instead, if we do manage to look at them, we judge them. May part of Hagar's lesson be that we see those in our world who need God's compassion. May we be God's eyes in this world. There was a professor of nursing in a prestigious university, and he was about to give his final exam. And the last question on the exam was, "What is the name of the man who busses the tables in the hospital cafeteria?" When the students got to that question, they were kind of surprised. One of the students raised her hand and asked, "Will that last question be part of our grade?" And the professor said, yes, the real world. In the real world, to be a great nurse, you must truly see people, every one of them, not just those you deem as your equal or as superiors, but those that you have unfairly snubbed. We all feel invisible at some point in our lives. Feeling invisible is a big reason I hated being a kid. I wasn't bullied as a kid, but I was invisible. I was a skinny, freckle-faced tomboy. I was a geeky bookworm who found entertainment in reading the dictionary. I wasn't really anybody you'd notice, but I was never invisible to the God who sees me. The end of Hagar's story is, in being cast away, she finds freedom. A God she did not know reveals himself to her, and the trajectory of her life is changed. Her son's history is changed. He too becomes a father of a great nation. Can God do this for us? Well, I don't think he's going to make us the parents of a great nation, but God can see us and meet us in our worst times. He can, and he does. The Bible tells us that God is searching for a people that he may powerfully strengthen through every circumstance and difficulty. 2 Chronicles 16:9, for the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. The Lord is daily searching out those who need his strength, grace, and power. He is searching for hearts that cry out to him and admit their need for him. So today, take heart, my friends. God sees every hurt, every trial, and every crisis we face. He desires to strengthen our weary hearts and our weakened faith. God will come and minister to us and strengthen us. He will pour out his grace on those who hold on to him. This is what God says to us in Hebrews 13:5. Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And this is what God says to us in Isaiah 41:10. So do not fear. I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Let us pray. God, we thank you today that you are the God who sees. You see us, not that you're spying on us, but that you're looking for us to help us. May our hearts be fully tuned into you, and may we take comfort in the God who sees me. Amen.